What's up, everybody, and welcome to episode number 134 of Confessions of a Market Maker. I'm your co-host, Ray, aka All Day Ray, aka Ray Butabi. And I'm joined here by my abominable co-host, former market maker, 20 years and current day retail trading educator, the man who staged more reversals than my last three relationships, the silverback of the now infamous House Street. JJ, how's it going?
Good brother, how you doing?
I'm doing very well. And our guest today has been a professional trader since 1999. In 2007, he co-founded T3 Companies and began serving as chief strategic officer of both T3 Live and T3 Trading Group. Our guest has built a reputation for his meticulous technical analysis, author of The Ultimate Guide to Moving Averages. You've seen him on CNBC, Bloomberg, and Fox Business. I'm talking about Scott Redler, AKA the Red Dog. Scott, how's it going, man? Thanks for joining us.
Going great. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Is there any story behind the Red Dog moniker, or is just kind of a play off your last name?
It's a little bit of everything. Well, I will say, I paid my way through college by emceeing bar mitzvahs and weddings, and I also bartended probably 5 nights a week in different places. So right around I think 1990s, the Red Dog beer came out. So Redler, Red Dog beer. And I was also president of my fraternity, so every now and then we'd have, nights out where if I got a little too drunk, if I liked you, I bit your shoulder. So by biting your shoulder meant that I liked you. So, Red Dog, Redler, Red Dog beer, just all of a sudden it just felt like it was something that stuck. And then, in town, I'm in Millburn Short Hills. I've been coaching lacrosse. Since like from like 2nd grade to 8th grade, and a lot of running because I've done a bunch of that kind of stuff. So instead of people calling me Mr. Redler or Scott, because Scott's like weird, for it's just been Red Dog and Coach Red Dog. So everywhere it's Red Dog. Even I go out and I introduce people get introduced to me. They're like, they say, "Hi, I'm Tommy." I'm like, "Well, I'm Red Dog." They're like, "Red what?" I'm like, "You'll remember it. It's a lot easier than Scott." So I'm like, "Yeah, I'll remember Red Dog." So, it's been around for a while, and it's really the last 10 years of people don't know Scott.
Yeah, that's funny. That's good. That's very good. Lacrosse, man. Lacrosse is a pretty cool sport. It's something I wish I played. I played hockey growing up, and a bunch of my buddies played lacrosse. I guess a similar skill set. I guess like with the stick handling and the cradling and similar movements. You still coach lacrosse, you said?
You know what? My son did both. So my son likes basketball, likes lacrosse, and I've always kind of coached. So me and a bunch of my friends started coaching in 2nd grade, and my son's done both. And in the end of the 8th grade, you really can't coach anymore. And they knew more than me in 5th, 6th grade. I just was like the endurance coach. I took them for trail runs. I made them do push-ups. I brainwashed them into work hard, type of mentality. I was never the X's and O's guys anyway. And then my son, who's been doing two sports, unfortunately, if you want to do anything really competitively, coming into high school, you can only focus on one because every sport is all year long now. So God forbid you play a few sports and get well-rounded and have your body aligned. So instead, he's all in basketball now. So I'm a little less of a lacrosse guy.
It's interesting. Not to take this off topic and keep going down the sports angle, but my son plays travel football down here in Florida. And to your point, it's a year round thing. Like they maybe have a couple months off in the winter, and then they're ready like come March or February. They're doing 7-on-7, and it's like not doesn't leave much time to do anything else. Maybe run a little track or something. But
What year is he going to be in?
he's going. He's in sixth grade. He just started this week.
Ha, 6th grade, and they're doing already. They're already doing 3 days when you're in 6th grade, I think.
It's wild. Yeah, it's wild. I mean, the football's intense down here, but yeah, it's awesome. And also to the sports thing too. Such a good the lessons you can take from sports translate so well into trading, don't they, Scott?
Yeah, 100%. Like my first article that was written, is back in like the 2000 something. I don't know if you remember Trader Monthly magazine. That was I do. a magazine by the editor was Rich Blake, and it was actually a funny story. Bob Pisani, I don't know if you also remember. He was, Oh, yeah. big guy in CNBC. He's the one who actually gave me my first chance in that then. So
Oh, cool.
anyway, so I was doing the Ironman because my best friend passed away of leukemia, and I was doing it. I did a few New York City, and then I was training for Lake Placid. And this editor, Rich Blake, heard about me through Bob Pisani, saying like, this guy is like working his butt off. He's doing an Ironman. He's raising 100 grand, all this kind of stuff. And he was doing an article on how there's a big correlation between endurance and high performance athletes in trading, because it's a lot of the same stuff. It's a lot of discipline. It's a lot of preparation. It's a lot of trusting yourself. It's a lot of, moving your feet and, being efficient. You can't be an Ironman if you don't have the right nutrition, or if you don't have the right gear, if you don't have the right sleep. So, from that, I've really developed my mantra, which is kind of like win the morning, win the day, get yourself set up, get up early, feel good, get prepared, control what you can control, because it's all the same thing in a lot of different sports. If you could put yourself in a position, through practice, by the time you're in the game, it's not like you rise to the occasion, you revert to your training. So that training is very important, and the routine and process is very important.
Very well said. And that's something I wanted to ask you about, your morning routine. I know like you're very big on that, and just tell us what your morning routine's like.
It's first of all, I like my morning routine a lot. I do get up at 4:45 every day, and first thing I do when I get up is I drink a 16-ounce glass of water, just because it's good. It flushes everything out, kind of back from my my Ironman days when you'd have lactic acid from doing 6, 7 hour bike rides or marathons or whatnot. And then from there, I kind of try and settle in where I don't look at my phone yet. You don't want to really look at your phone in the first 10 minutes and see where your positions are and get in a good mood or a bad mood. Let your body wake up, let your mind wake up. So I try and say, hey guys, do not look at your phone in the first 10 minutes, and do not have your phone by your bed, because if you wake up in the middle of the night to see what the futures are doing, to see what Asia's doing, chances are you might not get back to sleep, So there are little things you could do to help your mentality stay strong and give you longevity. I've been doing this for 30 plus years, not because I'm the smartest guy out there. I'm just someone who's pretty well balanced through sports and hopefully through family and just, a little bit of common sense. By that point, then I sit at, I actually have a sauna in my house. I got my sauna through the pandemic when you couldn't go to gyms anymore, and I was a kind of a sauna rat too. So I bought a sauna for my basement. So I turn the sauna on, then I sit down, and then I look at what's happening in Europe. I look at what's happening in Asia. I look at what the futures are doing. I try and see if there's anything that seems and feels weird. Like, why are the futures, down 14 if Europe's up and Asia's up? Obviously, maybe Trump said something. But so I try and correlate like what I think should be happening with what's happening. And then I look, I run through some tickers and what's going on. And then by that point, then I kind of send a tweet out to, the public Twitter sphere saying, good morning and whatnot, just to show the routine and process. And then I go into Red Laurel Access, which is a subscription that we have where, I'll put up what's going on overseas. I'll post a few levels of the sectors, whether it's the Qs or the spies or this and that, give a few little tidbits and just a little bit of a taste. And that's usually around, 5:15. And then I jump in the sauna for a half hour, listen to music, listen to podcasts, get my mind right, work out, sweat a little bit. Then, by 6 o'clock, actually 5:58, I have to be out of the house. If it's 6:02, I'm late. No, but every minute counts. And then by that point, I stop at 7-Eleven. I get my iced coffee. I'm learning a little bit of Hindi. If you know Kamcho or Manja, like, there's a lot. I have them teach me a word every day or two. And I also pick up
That's
a piece
cool.
of garbage once a day. You pick up one piece of garbage a day. It helps your psyche. That's in a whole nother story we'll get into. And then I'm in my office by 6:20. I do this thing called the 6:30 Club, which is a free video. I started doing it during the pandemic, where I'm a lot, where management lets me talk for 20 minutes for free, talk about the markets, talk about the keys to the day, put some things out there, that do make people money. And if people are like, wow, I've been tuning in every day at 6:30, maybe I could spend the whole day with him on the Alpha team, where you have 500 prop traders that trade real time around the world. They see my positions, they see what I'm doing, and we interact. And a lot of them, are great. Like, they're my team. It's like my team, like back in the day, training for an Ironman or wrestling. It's like you need a team. So that's part of the T3 mantra, is like, a few hundred eyeballs are better than two. So don't trade alone. So by that point, I'm doing the 6:30 Club for 20 minutes. When I'm done with that, it's like 7 o'clock. And then what I do is I usually mark up about 40 charts, and I start posting them on the Alpha team and on Red Laurel Access. 40 charts, the sectors, mega cap tech, the semis, whatever's in play. I do a little bit of language around it, giving a you know a, an actionable approach to it. And then now it's like 8 o'clock. You know, my editor, you know, tunes in, says, where are we at? And then I look at the note that we've been putting together and I add a few little things to it. Then I do a morning call. Then it's 8:45. I stretch a little bit, maybe drink a little bit more water, drink a little. By this point, I'm done with my iced coffee and I put water in there. So I'm very efficient. And then 9:15, I'm on the radio and I'm trading. I'm trading for a living. And hopefully I'm trading as well as I'm writing. Sometimes I write better than I trade, like everyone else. But when it's all together and it's moving together, it's really cool. And, you know, that's and then that's the day. By 11:30, you know, I'm kind of spent. I've been up since 4:45. I leave. I try and tell my community, like, get up from your desk. You know, you have to like refresh. I go sometimes take a spin class, or I'll go take my dog or do something for an hour, put some stops in on my existing swing trades where when the trade changes, and then I come back at like 2 o'clock and I trade the close, do a recap, and I've been doing that for thousands of days.
Yeah,
Nice.
excellent. Such a structured or process a system you have, and I think like it highlights like I think like you know a lot of the people JJ we know people just think they could
Jeez.
just wake up 8:30, 9 o'clock, turn on the
Oh,
computer
yeah.
and just go at it, and just like the highlight like contrast like what people think they can do and then what professionals do.
Totally. I mean, when I, even for me, when I switched from, you know, selling stock for insiders for 25 years to retail, oh my God, I had no discipline at all. You know, because, I mean, after the close, we used to go to the bar and drink because, you know, all we did was we controlled the supply, so it was no big deal. But retail, the amount of discipline to trade retail is just insane. And listening to Scott, for those of you guys who are listening to this podcast, pay attention to this man, because that's the only way that you're ever going to get ahead in retail trading is to be structured the way he's talking about, to have that routine, because that's just so important. I'm sorry, I'm just harping on this because it's been a thing this week where people are just like, oh, I'll just wing it, right? And it's like, no, this is not jazz guitar. You can't improvise, right? You
Right.
know, like, you've got to have structure. And really, thank you for going through that, because it just shows, and it shows not only the structure, but how long he's been doing it, where it becomes like breathing. At first, it seems really difficult to discipline yourself. And then after a while, you start to miss the structure. And it's really important that we point out that he's not been doing this for a week. He's been doing this for decades, right? So.
Can I add to that? I'm going to say, like, you know, I've seen so many traders come and go. Like, I try enough. You guys are like, you know, you said in Florida, like, I'm, you know, like 90s Yankees fan. Like, I've kind of be like Derek Jeter. You know, you just want to get on base a lot. You want a high percentage. I want to hit some singles and doubles, maybe every now and then steal a triple. Like, I totally advocate, you know, don't be Reggie Jackson, where you either get a lot of home runs or a lot of strikeouts. That's a tough way to go through life. You know, it feels good to get on base all the time, right? You know, you make some trades turn into swing trades, some swing trades turn into monthly trades, all depending on your system. I've seen thousands of traders make, I've seen guys, you know, that I've trained make so much more money than me, which is great. I love it. But then, you know, they think they're going to make it forever. They buy bigger houses, lots of cars, and all of a sudden the market constricts a little bit. They don't make that anymore. They get stressed out and they can't put on the trades and they've been out of the business. So it's really a process of like cost averaging a career, treating it like a business. Don't let your highs get too high, your lows get too low. And you know, a lot of like I love the title of, you know, of your guys' podcast, because like I've dealt with, even recently in the last 3 4 years, there's been like a lot of sales traders, institutional traders that used to be able to like cover someone, take them out to dinner, get a few pennies and get $100.
Exactly.
Right? They
Sorry.
don't have that
Yeah.
anymore.
No, exactly. And that's how I used to do business. You know, I'd go to New York and the boys from Knight would take me out, and you know, I'd just direct my order flow to them because I was selling billions of shares of stock out of Canada. And I'd give them, you know, 3 cent give ups, you know, on every 100,000 share lot, right? So they loved me, right? And yeah, and that is all gone now. You know, now it's all about the work and the discipline, not, you know, who you take to scores on a Friday night, you know?
The score's still even open. I've never been there. No, I'm kidding. it's a sports bar, right?
It's a sports bar. It's a sports bar. Baseball. Baseball. Yeah.
That's quiet.
But what's interesting on that whole topic is there's been a lot of businesses that have left, a lot of people that used to make a lot of money on Wall Street, whether they're a market maker, an institutional sales trader, even the buy side. A lot of them are so used to like looking at their PA and trading their PA, and they've wanted to turn their PA, which is their personal account, into a prop account in retail because they don't know how to do anything else. Like, I've been looking at the market for 15 years. What could I do now? So they turn
Yeah.
into, or they want to go turn into a prop trader. So I try and help them just, come up with the framework for their mentality. Some guys from buy side, they were imagining like $2 billion, and now it's like when they have up $400,000 in the market and they lose $1,000, they're losing their head. Meanwhile, when it wasn't their money, they didn't care. But when it's your money and you have to net every month or every quarter to get a paycheck, it's a lot different. It's like, this isn't going to end well isn't a strategy for the bears out there. It's like, what are you short? What are you short against? What's your time
Yeah.
frame? Why isn't going to end well? Not just because you don't like the administration or you don't like the tariffs. It's what's showing you that. It's like, you come up with a framework and you identify your risk and you can make money. And you have to make sure that if you're trading retail or prop, it's August 12th. If you have a thesis, it better trigger. Otherwise, it's an opinion, and chances are you're not going to make money in it, and there's no paycheck for you in September. So, a lot of guys have kind of funneled into the prop world because if you learn how to prop trade and trade retail, and you could do it, and you have your routine and your process, no one could take it away from you.
Exactly.
It's yours.
That's one thing. One of my clients, like I used to call the Penguin, he told me that like 34 years ago, you know.
Thirty-four.
And
You were trading when you were 38? No.
I'm
Yeah.
57, so I've been in this since 92,
Nice.
and Briex was the first deal I ever worked on, so it was a long time ago. And yeah, so it's great to talk to people who've been around for a while.
Want to hear something funny? So you've been around since 92, so you probably, did great considering you went through 92 and you went through the ramp up into the Nasdaq 2000.
Oh yeah.
I started in like 99, but I started with Nasdaq 3800. By the time I was done training, the Nasdaq bubble burst and I had no idea how to short stocks. And I would the market, the stock would drop 120 points and I would figure out that $12 bounce. And
Yeah.
I missed that whole part of it that a lot of people, put a lot of money away. But by seeing the Nasdaq bubble burst and trading through it through experience, that's what brought me really the success of, the financial crisis. Whereas when I started to be on TV, I don't know if some of you guys know, with Mark Haynes and Aaron Burnett, I was on Squawk on the Street and I was on a lot. And there was a head and shoulders top pattern that triggered when the first time I was on TV and I said that it was going to trigger and we're going to fall 10%. Mark Haynes laughed at me and so did Aaron Burnett. And then a week and a half later, we were down like 8%. And then I
Yeah.
was on for like a bunch of years thereafter.
Nice.
But it was all, at that point, technicals were kind of voodoo. I think even Bob Pisani said it on air with me. He's like, so here's a guy, Scott Redler, he trades the technicals and everyone thinks it's voodoo, but he makes a living doing it. And then everyone became a technician.
Yeah. Yeah, Scott, I mean, obviously, an interesting time for you to start your career, and that's, I wanted to ask you about that. Do you just yeah, just kind of just give us like a how it was when first coming into trading, like struggling. Did you take well to it? Just, anything around the beginning of your career.
Well, what's interesting is so I was, like I said before, I used to MC bar mitzvahs and weddings, which gave me, I guess, the presence to not be, stressed about talking to some reporter on TV about what I do. Imagine like 300 people in a room, they spent 100 grand on a bar mitzvah and you sucked on the microphone. That's a lot more stressful than talking to a reporter that is looking into a teleprompter, which you're not. But anyway,
Hold on. Hey, real quick, Scott, how did you get into emceeing bar mitzvahs? Like, how did that come about?
I'm just so damn handsome that found me off the
Oh, that's
street. That's but on that story, so I started to do that. I was in SUNY Albany and I was promoting parties and stuff. My parents didn't have the thing is my parents didn't have a lot of money. I lived in South Woodbury, so they were kind of house poor but neighborhood rich. I wanted to be around a lot of successful people, a lot of lawyers and doctors and stuff like that. So they never had money, so I had to work in order to keep up with my friends back in the day. And so it taught me a lot of great lessons. Like I was out, shoveling snow, and like that was part of my budget. I would count how many snow days there would be and how many, driveways I would have to do even before, that end of it. But anyway, so what happened was, if you look up, After doing a lot of the clubs, when I graduated from school, I became a little bit of a concert promoter. I did a Prince concert. I did a Chubby Checker, James Brown, Jeff Foxworthy. I
Oh, cool.
produced a lot of his events. And then all of a sudden, we had the rights to the R. Kelly tour. He was not a pedophile then. He was I Believe I Could Fly. He was Michael Jackson. Everyone thought he was going to be the crossover. So my job was to go out and raise $2 million to fund his tour. So I went out and I did it. I met with all the labels and I learned the business. I was on page six, constant impresario, local guy does good, brings R. Kelly to Nassau Coliseum. So what happened? But the interesting part of it was there were these guys that were trading at Broadway Trading. I don't know if you remember that back in the day. So Mark Sperling, who was like an unbelievable trader, he had a group of like 100 traders, and they were all making so much money buying like Canteen and Commune, all these restaurants in the city. And I
Oh,
met one of them.
Commune. Sorry. I
Remember
remember that
Commune?
restaurant. Yeah,
How
I
many girls did you
remember
make out with downstairs in that area?
that.
That, and
I
then
gotta
the
take
what?
the fifth.
Right, that was a great. There was so many of them. So these guys were just putting money anywhere because they were making so much money on that ramp up of the internet bubble. And then, I went to them. It was R. Kelly, Kelly Price, Nas, Foxy Brown, and Busta Rhymes. That was the tour. It should have worked. It didn't. So I raised about $400,000 from these traders. Mark Sperling gave me like 150. Little guys would give me 25s, and I raised it from them. I would go in there. I got them all tickets and became friendly with them. And then, P.S. About 11 dates through, he wasn't selling out. What's it called? From the Hard Knock Life tour, Jay-Z, was the competition and blew R. Kelly out of the water, obviously, and he still did. So my tour went into bankruptcy. So the money that was there went into like a conservatorship, and everyone hated me. Besides the traders, they didn't care. They were losing money everywhere. So they said, "Why don't you come become a trader and come work for me?" And at that point, I didn't want to sell anyone. I didn't want to talk to anyone. All I wanted to do was sit in front of a monitor, and if I'm right and do my job, I get paid because I did my job for that tour. I raised the money. I went out. I was like there. It wasn't my job, my fault that he didn't sell out or do whatever he was supposed to be doing, or the radio people. But anyway, so from there it was like 1999, and I just I wound up I was in bankruptcy myself, like at age 28. So I had to like slowly work my way out of that whole thing where everyone had all this money, and I was just I was kind of a natural at it. So within a year, I was on my own. Within like 2 years, I was a manager. Then the tech bubble burst. Everyone left the business. Because they thought it'd be too hard to ever make money again during 2001, 2002, when the Nasdaq went to 1,000, and it was stuck in the mud. And that's when I really learned my craft. I went to Willie O'Neill's classes in California. Dan Zanger, went to some of his classes. He's chartpattern.com. He's fantastic. And I really learned. So then when we invaded Iraq in 2003, we went in the next bull market. Boom, I became a partner. I was there. I was making money. I was, getting away from the cliff, buying an apartment, getting, just doing all the things that a lot of people did earlier because I put too much out there for that tour. And then by the time we merged to become T3, I was a small partner because I didn't have money. So I became a small partner of T3 because I didn't have the money to put in, but I was a sweat equity guy. I was the worker. We did a book. I was called the workhorse. Because at that point, that's what I had to do to get my percentages work. And I just kept working and working and, got bigger percentages. And, out of all the partners that we started with, there's only three of us left. So, I guess it was meant to be that I would be where I am. And it was very hard to get here.
What a way to get into trading, though. Holy moly. What a I guess like destiny, you can't escape your destiny. Like that's interesting, man. That's crazy. Wow. How would you like when you first started trading then? Because you said obviously you're doing it during the dot-com bubble and this, and then you mentioned afterwards you started taking classes, and that's really when you like came into your own. Like how were you trading like before that? Like how were you making money? Like what just kind of like before you started taking the classes and I guess really becoming a technician.
It was all price action. I was just reading the
Yeah.
tape. Like right now, I'm one of the few guys that I have 30 level twos on my screens. I'm watching the inside market. I'm watching things. It helps with my ADHD. I do all my chart work prior, and then I have, the different groups where I, have, SPIs, Qs, IWMs. Here is like, NVIDIA, AMD. I'm like, I watch it. So I was a tape reader. Plus, they were pretty good at it. Like, they wrote a few books back then. They, lower highs and lower lows. You're bearish, higher lows and higher highs. You're bullish and. So they did have a pretty good, they taught you somewhat, but these guys were making so much money and they were doing really not a lot of work. They would come in hungover, look at the most active section in the New York Post in sandals and shoes, and they were making, 50 to 60 to 100,000 in a day. And that was when you put .com on the end of it, it jumped 100 points, and they weren't thinking about it. We got too smart. When you're too smart, sometimes you get risk averse. These guys just didn't care. So I was training while these guys were making big money. There were two guys that were actually pledges for me when I was in SUNY Albany, and I was the president who's they're not really smart guys, I'm not gonna name their names. They were making $100,000 in a month, and I was like, what the hell's going on here? By the time I was ready to do that, it was all over. So I had to do the hard way, and rebuild.
Did you always come with the like the same type of like disciplined like mentality back then as like you display now?
I think so, not as much. Like I was always like I was a wrestler. So as a wrestler, you have to be very disciplined. The workouts are crazy. You're losing weight. Well, so I was always a big Rocky fan. People make fun of me, but like I always had that whole mantra of like work hard. And my parents didn't have money, so I always had to do more, than most people. So I had that. But then really what transformed me from is really when my best friend died of leukemia when he was not even 30 yet, and he bought me a racing bike because I did like a sprint triathlon, and bought him and his and my friends bought it for me because I did like a, my first race. I went from wrestling and all that stuff and flag football and being a musclehead. I wanted to do endurance racing. So at that point, that was after my bankruptcy. I didn't declare bankruptcy, but I was like, they knew it was a tough year for me, so they went out and bought me a bike, and then I started to do the racing, and then all of a sudden, Steven, his name was Steven Perez. He was a hard partying guy and was out a lot, so maybe he thought it was a hangover, and he never really went to the doctor. So by the time he went to the doctor, they kept him there, and they like you have leukemia. And within 6 weeks, he died. And so that next year, I used that bike that they got me to train, and that's when I did my Olympic triathlon. That's when I did the story in Trader Monthly magazine, and then I started the road to the Ironman, and that's really what got the discipline set because you had to fit a lot into a day. If you're going to do an 11, 12 hour race and you're going to work and you're going to be prepared, give someone something busy to get it done. Well, I was one of the busiest guys in the world, and that kind of set the tone, so it was always in my mantra, but like that really honed me in and got me really focused and disciplined in trading because if to do everything, you had to really put a lot of hours in and a lot of time in.
Very good. Very good. Just got to take a quick time out to let the listeners know about our trading Discord server, the Trading Syndicate, where we offer not only ES, where JJ teaches and trades, but other futures, instruments, stocks, crypto, and we have DFS and sports betting channels, which I'm highly active in. Again, you guys can come visit us at tradingsyndicate.org. Scott, for the listeners who don't know T3, let the audience know what you guys like, who you guys are, and what you do.
So T3, we try and be everything for everyone or something for everyone. We have these like my team is the alpha team where I basically am like the quarterback of a room of 500 people. Everyone has different things that they're good at. I put everything on paper. I put the 40 charts in. They see my positions, but they all contribute what they're looking at, and everyone gravitates to different styles based on their personality. There are a few other guys like me that also moderate rooms. That are just a little bit of a different style. So if someone wants to scout more and doesn't do overnights, or somebody is bigger picture and doesn't trade as much but feels like they're bigger. So that's that kind of stuff. So you could also come. You could get licensed and trade with T3. You could trade retail where you don't get licensed and you just get the economies of scale. You could also just subscribe to our services and work at Goldman Sachs or work anywhere and just be a subscriber and not registered or be an associated member. So we really have done a lot. It's really like built by traders for traders. And although a lot of us, like I'm on TV a lot, I'm not the talking head. I try and just speak in a way where people can understand and put myself out there in a way that people could replicate. I'm not a billionaire hedge fund guy where people can't do what I'm doing because it's too complicated. Like, I'm trading the names, I'm using technicals, I'm trying to use a tier system, I'm trying to, get prepared, I'm trying to do all the things we all try and do, and do it in a way where people are like, wow, I could do that too. Or maybe I can coach my, I can coach my son's kids and be happy. Or hey, maybe, I'm not going to go out and buy that extra house when I had a good year. I'm just going to pay down my mortgage or do a few things. So I just try and speak from experience. And my, I'm not, like I said, it's not like I'm this brain surgeon, brilliant guy. I went to SUNY Albany, but I paid my way through. I was president. I had a lot of fun, and red dog biting shoulders. Like, it's you don't have to be in an Ivy League think tank to be successful out there. You just have to work hard, and if you do good things, usually good things happen, or try to.
Very true. It's your firm has a lot of flexibility. That's really cool. That's really, really good. How do you deal with that? Sorry to interject there, Ray, but how do you deal with that with compliance? You guys must have a very intricate or like really on the ball compliance
Well, you
sort of
want to hear,
department
actually,
department.
that's really interesting that you said that, because Sean Hendelman, who's the CEO, like, I don't remember exactly when it was. I think it was like 2012 to 2015. He paid so much for legal and compliance. He put so much in place for legal and compliance. And then when the market kind of got a little shaky during 2012 to 2016-ish, remember, like, the European Union was going to implode and trading wasn't so great. There was like lots of prop trading firms that were going under because they couldn't afford the compliance, they couldn't afford the legal. So what he did is he just went out and bought them and said,
Oh,
hey,
nice.
use our compliance, use our infrastructure, and don't worry about the bookkeeping, this and that. We have the model. So that's how, he wound up, because at that point there wasn't like a lot of new traders out there. It wasn't like in 2000 when people went out of school and said, I want to be a trader. It was more like the people who have been trading for 10, 14 years that still needed a home. So because we had all this compliance, they came in here, and some people would leave or whatever, but then the cream rises to the top and they would stay. So one thing that T3 always did is they spent money on compliance and legal. So this way we like I don't like it's funny, like, I go on CNBC or Fox Business, and the other like Liz Claman would call me a genius, and I would be like, we should use that soundbite. It's like, we can't use that soundbite because you're not a genius. I'm like, well, she said it. You could use it, like, or the great Scots, or here's a trader who, so many things that we do that we can't even use. So we just try and just every day show what we do and how we do it. And, slowly but surely, people gravitate towards who they want to be around. So that's why, even with the 630 Club, like, you can't do it for more than 20 minutes. You're giving out too much for free. I mean, I'm not giving out too much for free. If I add value to people's lives in 20 minutes, they know that there's a lot more value to be had, and usually, slowly but surely, things build. And if you build it slow, it gets strong, and then you could build it faster.
Nice.
For sure. One of our good friends, he trades prop with you guys, Dennis. Shout out to Zen Trader.
Nice.
Scott, you've been in the game for a long time. People you've traded with, maybe people you've helped, mentored, whatever. What are some of the traits that you think separate people who sustain being a trader for like long term than people who fizzle out?
It's being consistent. It's trying not to have too many opinions. You want to be flexible. That's why I think you said something about, the moving averages book. Like, one of the people, like, I guess if people like know whom, they're always like, oh, the 8 and 21 day moving average. Like, they make fun of me with that. But the bottom line is, when the SPYs and the Qs are above the 8 and 21 day moving average, it's a strong market. You try and be long. That's the way it is. You look for the stocks that are showing the most relative strength, that are leading the way, and you try and be long, and you try and make money that way. When you're below the 8 and 21 day moving average, maybe you could see the 200 day. So you could say, this isn't going to end well. You look for more shorts, you be more tactical. I'm not as good on the short side as I'm on the long side, but I know what makes me tick. So I just have a lot more cash, and I do a lot less trading, and then I look for my spots a little bit better. But it's really those that, don't think they're so smart and use technicals and use their process and system and really, really use it versus say they're going to use it, they last. And once again, it takes time though. Like early in trading too, it's like when you need to pay bills and you need to make money. Sometimes you don't do exactly the right trade. You're just making money. You're just happy about it, so you want to take it versus waiting to get to your, where you think it's going to go and what the right thing to do is. So even for me, like a lot of like the guys that were used to make millions when I was kind of coaching them, they're like, it's going to come for you too. Like you just need some money in the bank. You need some stability, and then you'll let things work out a little bit more versus, being a little squirrel and gathering your nuts every time, you finally make a good trade. You have to let good trades work, but you also have to net money, which is why you use a tier system. So you make a little and you let a little bit go. You make a little bit more, and then if the third part doesn't work, then at least you made on the first two parts. So and don't swing for the fences. You don't have to swing for the fences, and also just don't copy people. Like on the VTF, I'm like, guys, don't just copy what I'm doing because you see my positions. Understand why I'm doing it and understand, the process behind it, so you could do it if I'm not here, and you could do it on your own. Understand. And plus, everyone, like I used to sit in the trading, like back in the day at Broadway Trading, there'd be a, 50 people on the desk. Everyone's trading eBay. Not everyone makes money. Some people buy too many shares, and some people don't know how to hold long enough, and some people do this, and some people do that. So there's a whole big formula. There's no holy grail in succeeding in trading. It's really just a formula of figuring out, what makes you tick, how you're accountable to your mistakes. You admit your mistakes, so then you look at them and maybe change those mistakes, and you keep making progress without perfection. Perfection never happens, but progress, a little progress is what keeps your mind going and keeps you moving further and keeps you making money.
Very well said. Very well said. What do you think? Like, what's like one part of trading you think that can't be learned from books and courses and only through screen time?
You just said it, screen time. Getting your instincts. You get your instincts and listening to your inner voice. Your inner voice tells you if something doesn't feel right. Your inner voice tells you if something's strong and you're short, you better cover. But you have to have clarity in your inner voice to listen to it. That's why I'm up so early, and that's why, I do my thing, because I like to balance myself so I can hear my inner voice. And you can't hear it if you're having trouble in your marriage sometimes. You can't hear it if your kid's up all night. You can't hear it if you're having problems with your, like, it's really the balance of life that gives you the visibility to hear your inner voice through your seat time. And it's preparation. If you're not prepared for the day and you don't know where some things were in the morning or what happened overnight or what's leading what, it's hard to even know, what's going on. And it's like scattered. There's like, I think Eli Manning actually said this, and I'm not really even a Giant fan, but when he first became the quarterback, he's like, the field is moving so damn fast. And then after a few games, he's it's like the field slowed down. You could see the routes the receivers are running. You know which way to turn for the running back. You could read defenses. So if you're not prepared and you don't know what you're looking at, things are going really fast. If you're prepared, things slow down and you could execute better. And that comes with seat time. Seeing the Nasdaq bubble burst in the year 2000 helped me with the financial crisis of 2007, 2008. The financial crisis of 2007, 8 helped me during the pandemic. You don't know how many people in 2020, like Short Hills people, like were like, oh my God, what's going to happen here? This is going to be worse than the financial crisis. I'm taking every dime out of the market. I'm doing this, I'm doing that. I'm like, why? I'm like, if you would have taken every dime out of the market in 2008, by 2012, we were already at an all-time high again. I'm like, just, do you need your money? You're 52 years old. You can't even take it till you're 59 or more. I'm like, just take a breath and put more in and cost average in. And meanwhile, after like 9 months, the market came back so fast. So I knew guys that thought they were the smartest men alive because they took their money out right before the financial crisis and they never put it back in because they were waiting for a dip. So you have to know, your time frame and when to do that.
Definitely.
One thing, if you get paid for a living, we break the 8 and 21, you get to get the hell out of the way and figure out levels. But it's another thing, you're not liquidating your 401k, your kid's 529, and stuff like that during market corrections. That's when you make your alpha by putting more money. When you see CNBC have the markets in turmoil segment and they bring out the octagon and everyone's all worried and you're down 10, 12%, that's when you put a little bit more into your monthly flows.
You mentioned Eli Manning. What, you like the Jets or what?
Sorry about that. You know what? To be honest, again, I worked so much when I was a kid, like on Sundays and stuff. I was also like an expediter at El Torito. Like I never really watched a lot of sports, and my dad never took me to games. So I was more like to play sports. My son is really into sports everywhere, so I do stuff to, hang out with him. But I like the playoffs. I like to go out and eat and drink and have fun. But I'm not the guy that's going to know like every stat, every player. Like it's not that interesting to
Okay, I
me.
just wasn't sure if you were a fellow miserable Jets fan like myself. So
I'm more
that's
of a
good.
Jet fan than a, you know, last time I was a real Jet fan was when Brian Cox was the linebacker and Vinny Testaverde was the quarterback. There
Vinny.
you go.
Yeah, Brian Cox, he had the neck. Dude, they don't wear those no
Yeah.
more. The like the I forget
With
what it was, but
Parcells,
the,
when Parcells was there, yeah.
yeah, that was a
I
badass
listen,
team. Curtis Martin, he was
Curtis
my
Martin,
I loved
I was,
Curtis.
yeah, I was
Yeah.
there. You know, the funny thing is, with my returning brothers, I did fantasy football, and because I didn't know a lot, and I just used my feel by watching a few games, I won 5 years in a row, and my friends hated me. They were like a think
Yeah.
tank statisticians, this and that. I would show up, go to the draft, drink a few beers, look at the thing, and just play it by ear.
Yeah. That's
While these
funny.
guys are like crunching numbers, reading like 10 different magazines that cost $14,
Right.
so upset that I would win.
Yeah. You, not to get off topic here, but I mentioned in like the little ad read we did, like there's similar strategical thinking, but like people will play like daily fantasy sports. It's got like DraftKings and like other sites like for high stakes. It's real interesting, the strategy and stuff, and a lot of crossover with trading. But we had a Jets coach on here, Eric Mangini. He was probably like
Oh, I
mid
remember Eric
2000s.
Mangini.
Yeah, we had Mangini on here because he has some interest in like trading and investing and stuff. So we brought him on. That was a cool one for me.
That's cool.
Yeah. So, Scott, I know we mentioned a little bit about like your mental outlook and like some of like your trading style, but I want to maybe just like a little bit more like specifics. I guess we'll start like what instruments do you trade?
What instruments do I trade? Hold on, I'm actually trimming a little spies right
Yeah,
now. Am I still on? Can you see me?
you're still here. Yep.
Where do we go with this? I'm also not the greatest with logistics on tech, and I'm in a lot of Google right now. So it's on the move. Hold on. Oh,
Yeah, no worries.
can you see me? So I could see straight ahead. I can't see
You're
the
good. You're
stuff.
good. Yep.
Yeah, we can see you. Yep.
All right. So I have a go-to list. So that's what I do. So part of my whole process, I use a go-to list, where I do the technicals of every sector to start. I put, see where the moving averages are, the prior day is high, the prior day is low. So that kind of gives me the roadmap. And then from there, I'm always doing the high beta tech names or the mega cap tech. And depending on what's what, I kind of do like an A, B, and a C list, depending on the setup. Like last week on Wednesday, Tesla ignited, gave me a day one. Apple ignited. Both those stocks were really difficult the last few months. They moved up the list.
Yeah.
Then Meta after the earnings. It's been digesting. I actually put Meta on as a power play yesterday. So anyone who's in my power play product is sitting in Meta up 3% right now. And then Microsoft also had good earnings. So I chart those, and then underneath them, I go to the semis with NVIDIA. Then recently AMD's been decent, SMCI sometimes, AVGO. So like I have them, and then I have the one-offs. Like in the last year, I started to trade Dash a lot. Some institutional friends brought it to me when it was like 144. So I started charting Dash and ASTS, and then obviously Palantir. So that's like my one-offs. And then every now and then new names come in. Like in the last 2 weeks, we've been charting BMNR and SPET because Ethereum became so hot. So I try and have my go-to list, and I put them all in a note, and then I move them up and down the list depending on the setup, to see what I have in front of me that's gonna, make me the most money and be where my time needs to go. I don't trade futures because I don't want to be up all night. I don't have the time. I'm up at 4:45. How the hell am I going to be up at 12, 1 o'clock trading futures? Lately with crypto, I've been only doing Bitcoin and Ethereum because I got caught in that 2021 debacle of the altcoins, and I'm like, I'm never doing altcoins again. It's not just enough time in the day for that. And I try and move around. Like today, I bought the XLE a little bit, thinking, hey, maybe money's going to rotate, so I'll donate money to that and be wrong again. MSOS, like the ETF for the cannabis names, 8 year bear market. Went back to that about a month ago when I saw an article how you had Mike Tyson and all these celebrities that were going to give Trump a hard time and deregulate it a little bit or do whatever. So I bought MSOS and I bought MJ. And as long as they're working and I call it special and you could buy dips and it's not hurting you, I've stayed with it and I'm still in it from like 260 to it was at 510 this morning. So I do have like 75% of my go-to list is usually the same, And and 25% of it is different based on the different names that are acting better, that are making you money using momentum rules, because I'm a momentum trader. I don't sit. I'm not looking 3 months out. I'm looking about what's going to make me money in the first, in 1 to 3 days, and then sometimes it turns out to 1 to 3 weeks, and then and then I move on from there.
Okay, so and
Nice.
you've mentioned a little bit like about like headlines news. So you're definitely like catalyst. Catalyst will get your interest in certain things, and you'll move over and take a look at charts.
I wouldn't say I'm a news trader, but
No, I
you
know,
have to
but
have the
more
news and
just to
know
see
what the
where the
news
mo
means.
like where the momentum possibly could be going.
Yes. And then, like,
Correct.
obviously, there was a lot of news this year. You had to figure out, like, what meant what
Definitely.
when Trump did the tariffs. So you have to, like, with technically, like, everyone's like, oh, you don't need to know fundamentals. You don't need to know the news. Well, that's baloney. You need to know a little about a lot, but a lot about technicals. You need to know what things mean when news happen. If all of a sudden there's great news and the market goes down, you're like, oh, it was priced in. Or all of a sudden it's bad news, market, it was, oversold, or it was better than feared. All those things have to play into your decision-making process,
Sure.
and that also happens with the preparation. It's one
Sure.
big formula. I tell my guys now, it's like we're all mini portfolio managers. You're figuring out how to allocate money and how to make money with it versus but not everyone is there. You start as a trader, you have to obviously net money, make a living, and get a paycheck. But most guys that I talk to and deal with, I don't, I'm, I don't have the brain power to deal with beginners, to be honest, or guys that are 1 to 3 years. I take a guy from hopefully from good to great, or good to a little bit better, and I try and do that for myself too. I just try and get a little bit better. I try and evolve and make the right choices. And if you do, they add up.
Yeah.
But it takes a lot. It's like the funnel to execution.
Sure. I like what you said. You said and I forget exactly how you phrased it. I'm gonna try and like repeat it, but you said know a little bit about a lot, but then a lot about the technical aspect. Is that it? Did I hear you correct?
Yeah, that was good. Look at you. You have like a photographic memory right there.
I like that. I thought that. I never heard anyone put it that way, and I think that was like that's excellently put. That was really well said.
I'll let you use it if you want, whenever you
I'm
want. $5,
I always give you credit though. I'm not a
$5 a use.
I'm not a biter of people's phrases. I can't do
It's okay.
that.
Like, people know they can't use the Red Dog Reversal. The Red Dog Reversal is a coined phrase. You could even Google it, and someone's like, everyone's naming it something different. It's funny how on Wall Street, everyone knows like what's their thing. Like, I use the VWAP, but like, it's not my thing. It's Brian Shanahan's thing. He's the one who does the seminars, this and that on
We
it.
love Shannon. Yeah.
He's
Yeah,
a great
Brian,
guy,
good
like
guy.
JC Peretz. Like, everyone has their thing, no one tries to like walk on someone else's toes.
Right.
But like, they're all kind of similar. You can call the Red Dog Reversal as a hangman bottom or a shooting star
Right.
top, or it's just ways to navigate, and you
Right.
want to make it fun. We're
Definitely.
fun guys, we're technicians, we're not that smart. That's why chart patterns like a head and shoulders top, it looks like a head and shoulders top. We're a little
Yeah.
triangle,
Yeah.
That's how we learn from kindergarten. We're just a we're one step away from kindergarten.
We've JC's awesome. We've had him on. Shannon, great. Love his stuff, his books. Okay, so speaking of the Red Dog Reversal, I did want to kind of ask you, maybe not just about that one specific, we can touch on that, but like just maybe some of the bread and butter strategies that you like to go to.
I use chart patterns. That's what I, that's the majority of, I look for pretty pictures. I'm a pretty picture guy. I use my moving average rules. When we're above the 21 day, I'm trying to look long. I'm trying to find relative strength. I use a tier system where it's not all or none, where I don't need to get everything at this one price and sell it at one price. It's a massage type thing. I have this thing called day count rules, where you get a day one igniting bar, like we saw last week in Apple. We saw that in Tesla and Baba, but Apple and Tesla worked great. Baba hasn't worked yet, but Baba's waking up today. If you want to take a look at Baba, I bought some 122 calls for next Friday. I had them for this Friday from last Wednesday, and they're getting a little bit more interesting. So, between day count rules, tier system, chart patterns, moving averages, inner voice, preparation, it's a formula. That's
Yeah.
Excellent.
Nice.
Excellent. Any other indicators other than the moving averages? And to be clear, at EMAs you use
I use
or
I use no I do the EMA, but guys on my VTF are always like, how come you use the EMA, not the SMA? I'm like, it's a magic marker. It's not a pencil. It's and plus the way that the computers are, they're trying to steal your lunch. It's like it could wiggle through, and you can't be that exact and precise. You have to give things like you just have to know the trend. Are you trading something that's in a trend like that? Can you handle it like that, or do you have to trade it like that? How active are you? So it's really just how much momentum is there. If it's above the 8-day EMA and SMA, chances are it's a strong trend. You could be long that thing, especially if the SPYs are at the 21-day. It's showing relative strength. I use the 8 and 21-day because it's not the 10 and the 20. Everyone talks about the 10 and the 20. Is the 8 smarter than the 10? No. Or is the 21 smarter than the 19? It's just the way that you look at it. How strong are you? How much risk can you have on or not? Usually the higher the moving average, the faster the trade is. If you can handle fast trades, some people would rather not. They'd rather be in things that move a little bit slower. Like, what's the difference between being in Tesla or Apple, depending on the speed or micro, it's all different.
Is there a specific like risk reward threshold that you shoot for in your trades?
I just want to be right and have spots to go. Like with the options, it's different. Like trading setups for earnings. Like when you trade options, like I don't day trade options today. I want to make a double, triple, or quadruple in my options because a lot of options are going to go to zero. So if you're doing an option trade, it's got to make sense. Like ASTS, from 60 down, I was like, you know what? I could buy the $50 calls for earnings. They're $2. And ASTS was at 55 today, and I was able to sell some at 4 and some at 5, and that made sense. You don't want to do an option trade to make 30%. Someone's like, oh, I made 12% on my option trade. I'm like, okay, how many times did they go to zero? So, I want and I like tight patterns. I don't like loose and wide patterns. Sometimes the red dog reversal, if you're down 4 days in a row and goes through a prior low, comes back up, you can quantify your risk versus catching a falling knife. Same way if you want a short. Into strength. You don't want to short just because it's going higher. Maybe put a high and come back below, quantify it. So every different day is a different day using different type of, risk reward setup. So after 4 or 5 days up, probably not the smartest thing to go all in long on something because it's 4 or 5 days up. It depends on how the range happens and when it happens. So, but again, you want to be right. I don't need to be right huge. I just sometimes, depending on the day, if I'm not in a lot of positions and I just want to make a little bit of money, I'll day trade. If I have a lot of positions on, I better make a lot of money because I could lose a lot of money. It all depends on where you are in the trend, where's the oscillator, and like today I wanted to come in. I didn't want to lose money. We had the CPI today. I had a great week last week. A lot of my names triggered. I traded them pretty well. So today I'm like, you know what? I'm gonna stick with some names. Like I'm in Google, I was in Tesla, Apple, Robinhood. I've been in Bob, and now Bob is getting better actually. Just little things. I just got bought back some XBI today. So depending on where you're at, is this worth it? Sometimes I say to my traders, I'm like, just ask yourself before you get into trade, is this trade worth it? If a stock just went up $5 and it's 11.45 and you think it might go up six, is that trade worth it at 11.45 to catch that last 80 cents if it's going to pull in a buck and a half and ruin your morning? So it's just, is it worth it?
Ever evolving picture. I guess anything else, Scott, like that, like for your personal trading that we haven't touched on, that's like key.
Just be prepared and listen to your inner voice and don't have too many opinions and keep moving those feet. If you keep moving those feet, just you can always like 2 weeks ago it looked like we were getting get bearish, right? You had that Thursday, Friday pullback, the VIX exploded, light risk, and then all of a sudden on Monday we filled the gap and showed the active bears had no power and you were able to buy things again. So you could always revisit. You could always revisit things too. If you're not sure, get a little flatter. Don't just throw things against the wall. If you're in a and also if you're in a hole, don't, try and make it all back. Try and chip away at it. I was in a pretty big hole actually in the first quarter of this year, just because I just got chewed up and this and that down six figures, and I was like, this sucks, but I wasn't going to try and make it in the day. I just, make 10, make 12, make 10, make 12, feel better, and then just keep all of a sudden, making strides, and then you're out of your hole, then you're making money. And like, wow, I just got out of a big hole, and you build some self-esteem, you build some self-confidence. Say, hey, I got out of a big hole, and now I'm at the highs of my year. Boom. Because that might happen again in a few years from now. So almost you had to remember, did I ever get out of a hole like this before? You're like, yeah, I did. I did. It's like, remember who you are. Remember what you did to get to wherever it is you had to go, and in anything. So
Nice.
How was trading from you obviously real experience now, and I don't imagine this is you know how to handle like the psychological aspects of trading now, but was there a time when, I don't know, maybe there's certain psychological aspects that, maybe like after having a losing month, or like you mentioned getting in a hole, but you've been there before, so you know how to handle these things now. But was there a time where these things were struggles for you?
That's always it. I remember the first time back in like 2000-ish, I was sitting there. I just went on my own. The semiconductors were really, really strong. I was sitting with this guy named Steve Gurdon, who was like the master trader and a few of us. And I think like PMCS came out and pre-announced, and I was in a bunch of semis and it went down. And I didn't really know how to get out of it. And I got out of a few, and then I wound up losing like 100,000 in a day. And I was like, and I never made, and I remember, calling my friend. My friend came over. I had like tears in my eyes. He walked me around the block a few times. I couldn't tell my parents because maybe my dad made 50,000 in a year, and how the hell am I going to tell him I lost 100,000 in a day? And that's what kind of got me a little risk averse, where I'm like, all right, maybe I shouldn't have so many overnights, or this kind of thing can happen, And thank goodness I was up decently, because that kind of trade could screw you up as a young trader. Like I think it was up like 60 for the month, so losing 110 or whatever in a day wasn't so bad. So then the next month I was able to make it back, and it only took me 2, 3 months to get back on track, But it happens. Sometimes, you learn from your lessons, and you learn from situations if you learn from them. Like they say, like in boxing, right? You have a there's a 10 count. You better get the hell up in 10 seconds, otherwise the fight's over. It's not like that in life. You could get knocked down, you stay down, you look at what knocked you down, look why it happened, how it happened, get up slowly and get up different so it doesn't happen again.
For sure.
Definitely.
And I think too, like the whole at least the way I think of it, and I think you'd agree, like your whole like life routine is optimized to have you in like the best mental conditioning coming into trading and life. And I think like putting yourself in that state just gives you the best ability to perform well and handle the stresses that trading can bring.
Yeah, for everyone. I'm literally in a sauna every day and an ice barrel every day for the last 4 or 5 years. I put it out there. My friends from Short Hills make fun of me, think I'm a weirdo, but it's fine. That's who I am. You don't want to be my friend, you don't be my friend. But then meanwhile, their kids are much having coming to my house and using my sauna and my ice barrel, and they're becoming friggin' D1 athletes. So anyway, you are who you are, and you don't have to do that, but maybe take a cold shower. The first half of this year, I fasted every single Monday. I did a thing with my Red Dog Mindset guys. I'm like, okay, I'm weigh 193 pounds. I want to weigh 177. That's my goal. And I did a fast every single Monday because I made a promise to myself. I said, I'm going to fast every single Monday. If you want to do it with me, let's do it. And we're going to do push-ups at lunchtime. And if you put it on paper and you do it, that's how you build your self-esteem. That's how you build your core inner strength. If you say you're going to do something, you don't do it, and you lie to yourself, you don't trust yourself, then who the hell is going to trust you? So it's all about, keeping promises to yourself. So maybe you can keep promises to someone else. If you drink too much, you say, hey, I'm not going to drink Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. And all of a sudden Tuesday you're drinking, like, ooh, maybe I have a drinking problem. If you can't control what you think you can control, then, you got to make some changes.
Should I try the ice tub, Scott? I don't know. What's the
I like it. Yeah. You would take a
yeah.
cold shower first. You ever take a cold shower?
I don't, yeah, I have. I don't know. I think I'm, fairly disciplined, I would say. You know what I mean? But the cold stuff I never got into. I don't know.
Well,
Uh,
hey, I mean,
listen, I,
I
you
grew up, it's cold, man. I've tried that ice plunge thing,
Yeah.
and it's I don't know. I haven't gotten used to it yet, but I mean, I grew up above North Dakota, so I have this philosophical thing against the cold, So, but I'll keep trying. I'll keep trying.
Listen, it just takes, it's just something. Everyone has their way to blow off steam differently. Some people might want to play chess. Some people might want to go for a walk with their dog. It's like, for me, not everyone has to be extreme. I've done 2 Ironman, 10 marathons, Spartan races. Like I pride myself on doing some things that I want to work towards and do. Not every, it doesn't mean that for someone else, it might not be the same. You do something, just something a little different, and then you do something a little bit different. It's like, wow, I did that. Maybe I could do that. You don't have to do a marathon in a day. Do a 5K. You don't. It's just somewhere. Start do something different. It also helps with the monotony of life.
Absolutely,
True.
absolutely. I think Living in Florida just made me soft a little bit, Scott. No cold threshold anymore. Last thing here, I'll let you get going on. I've really been enjoying this conversation. I guess just a current market outlook as we're talking here on August 12th. Any comments?
Here we are. The SPY's at 641, right? We're soon, all-time high. A week ago, it looked like we were going to be in the August volatility, and then the like I said before, you have to be flexible. I did bring some risk down into that week because it felt like it, and then you had the 2-day down move, and all of a sudden we started to repair, and then some things triggered, and I'm just going to try and keep looking for setups. Instead of looking for tops, look for a setup, not for a top, because when the
Nice.
top comes, it's just what you. You never know. It could be in 2 weeks from now. What kind of opportunity costs between now and then? So if you put everything together, like I said, if also depends on your time frame. How like we're both in our 50s or so. You look younger than that. Did you say how old you are?
Yeah, I'm 33.
Yeah, you look 33, and your partner, what is it, 55-ish,
He's 57. Yeah.
57. So for you, it's different. A lot of things different. Are you married and you have young kids? Or you?
Oh, me?
Well,
No.
Ray is not married
Ray,
with young kids. He's probably,
he's got a kid. I was never responsible enough to have children. So,
Okay, that's. Did you ever have a dog?
yeah, dogs, cats, all that stuff.
There you go. Well, anyway, for you, Ray, actually, 33 is an interesting spot. When I was 35, I had my son Chase, and he was already like 4 or 5. I started his 529 account late. So what you want to do is make sure you start a 529 early. My really good friend went to work for a life insurance policy called Strategies Wealth for Life, and he's like, Scott, Red Dog, you have to get a whole life insurance policy. I'm like, what do you mean I got to get a whole life? He's like, do it now at age 35 and sacrifice X amount of money, and there'll be a cash value and then a death benefit. He's like, you should get this for you and this for your wife. So I got term for her, which is more of an accident policy, and I got whole. So here I am now at 52. I have 2 years left. I have a nice cash value and the death benefit. And when I'm 20 years in, it pays for itself. And I sacrificed $1,100 a month for 20 years, but I would have spent it somewhere else. So the earlier you sacrifice for in the market, it's all your time frame. So 401k you maximize, 529 you start early for college. I did the whole life, and little by little, every month your savings account might not go up, but you're depositing money in different buckets that wind up adding up. One thing I learned through life is like anyone who has an asset, if you can keep that asset, never sell it because they always go up. Look where Bitcoin was, look where gold was, look where the S&P is, look where my parents both their houses were, so it's just like. It all depends where you are in your life. If you're right now, like with the market at all-time highs, if my dad, who's 81 years old, said, "Hey, I'm a little bit worried about my bills in the next few years," I'd say, "All right, you can reduce 30%, go to cash, because maybe something happens and you need it." But as far as the market's concerned, you have to look at it through your lens. You have a, depending on your age, and your lens, Ray, is different than my lens. What do you need to spend money on, is different too. How much your nut is, and you have to figure out what's your nut, what do you want to put away, what can you sacrifice, and just keep doing it and do it in a way that makes you happy. You have to have a routine you like because you got to do it every day. If you have a routine you don't like, chances are you're not going to do it and you're not going to do it well. So you only go around this merry-go-round once or twice, or maybe 3 times, depending on what you believe. But once in this form.
Once in this form. Good stuff, Scott. I lied. I do have another question. Because it made me think when we were talking this. And it, th this came up a little came up a lot, like when we were talking, like kind of like the flexibility to like no, well, no, that your thesis is maybe not correct, or it's this is not a trade, or like, hey, the market was looking like it was going to do this, but now we're hitting all-time highs. I think this is like a tough thing for traders, at least from what I've seen, is to have that like flexible mindset. I guess people don't like to admit when they're wrong, or people get like locked into a specific scenario. How do you think one cultivates like the flexibility of mind?
Just time, time and experience. The more times you're opinionated and you're wrong and you get punched in the gut, the maybe the next time you won't get punched in the gut and you'll think twice before, not looking at signals and not looking listening to your inner voice. It just takes time. Like I've been doing it for a long time, and the more open you are to listening to your elders and speeding up your learning curve, the better also. That's what's the beauty of T3 also. It's like on the alpha team, it's funny is for some reason my product gravitates to a lot of 45 to 60 year olds. Just for some reason, we all kind of are moderates in the middle and think a certain way, and but then there's like a bunch of 25 year olds in the alpha team or 30 year olds, and it's like we're like their parents. And they're like, we'd be talking of, they'd be talking, one guy's like silver. He's like, oh, you boomer, buy Ethereum. And it's just, have fun. So it's, it just takes time. It takes time. And hopefully some, if someone says something that take a look at it. So it, like, again, I try not to have like people be cynical on my virtual trading for, like, again, if they say this isn't going to end well and they're bearish and they've been bearish for a month, obviously they're opinionated and they have no reason, to
Exactly.
speak. I'm like, you're not allowed to speak unless you give me a reason why, you're bearish or you're short on this, or a reason why you like this long, and it can't be because you like hamburgers, think about what just happened with Chipotle. Chipotle was a great stock for a while, then technically broke down, and someone took it into earnings, lost a lot of money. I'm like, why'd you take it into earnings? He's like, my kids eat there every day. I thought the earnings would be good. I'm like, well, you can't take a stock of the earnings because your kids like, the bowl with rice and double chicken and mozzarella,
Very
So,
true.
man, that shit got it. I went there the other day. It was $22. I got like double barbacoa. I'm like, this is crazy.
$22.
$22. But anyway.
The inflation, and they say the CPI is light. I doubt it, but anyway, I'm not going to argue. This morning they were arguing on TV about the CPI. I was watching whether or not the spies would get through 639 or 640, and if there was participation with the names I was in. I wasn't interested to see whether or not they were cooking the books for the CPI or even the jobs report. It is what it is. There's this whole debate on did they cook the numbers of the jobs report so Biden didn't, look better. I'm like, is that going to make you money now? And is that going to take away from brain power and things you need to be focused on?
True.
It's just.
All right, that's just as important as anything else, right? Scott, like knowing what to pay attention to or put your mental focus on, right? Just as much as anything
Yeah,
else.
that takes time too. Like we said before, know a little about a lot and a lot about the things that are going to make you money or
Awesome.
make you happy. Nice.
I'm gonna make that the tagline of the podcast right there.
There you go. Sounds good to
The
me.
title. Scott, oh, well, that's going to conclude today's episode of Confessions of a Market Maker. If you guys enjoyed this episode, please rate and review it for us. If you'd like to join a supportive and professional community of traders, you can join us at thetradingsyndicate.org. Scott, tell the listeners where they can find you, anything else you'd like them to know.
I would just, come to T3 Live and check out the entire site. It's training, trading, technology. There's a lot of different things that you could benefit from there. I am the moderator of the Alpha team. If you feel like, you want to test the waters on Twitter every day at 6:30, Monday through Thursday, I'm on for 20 minutes just talking about some news, some things that I'm seeing. Sometimes I'm playing some music, showing a little bit of my personality, and start somewhere. And if you want to
Nice.
make changes, you have to, or have change, you have to make changes, type of thing. The other day I was in actually a SoulCycle on Montauk, and someone's like, strong choice is strong life. I'm like, I like that.
Yeah, that's good.
Strong choice is strong life. It takes strong choices and strong, you have to do strong or hard things to develop your go time so you can execute when it's time to execute. And you got to
Nicely
start
said.
somewhere. It can't be just one day. It's got to be day one.
Nicely said. Thank you so much, Scott. And thank you for those memories of commune. I had forgotten about that. Those were good times, brother. Thank you so much.
Wait, if you like that, what about Angelo Maxes? You definitely went there.
Yeah.
Dancing on the
Oh
tables
man.
before dancing on the tables at St. Bart's, right? Everyone
Yeah,
was doing it on
exactly.
21st and Park or something like that.
It's like another couple of lives ago.
Yeah. We all have, how many lives do we have? Hopefully you have the nine of them. Not everyone gets all
Exactly.
nine, so you got to, appreciate the fourth, fifth, sixth, and seventh, hoping that a few more happen.
Definitely.
Good stuff. So for Scott Redler, I'm John Studd. He's the gorilla of Howe Street. You stop, though.